Welcome to The Debrief, everybody. We begin tonight with the Texas case of death row inmate Rodney Reed, with action in state and federal courts, celebrity pressure, and zero chance that an execution will actually occur this week.
The Texas Court of Criminal Appeals has blocked Reed's execution indefinitely, giving lower courts time to consider whether the state botched its case against him. Reed's attorneys say he's innocent of the rape and murder of Stacy Stites in 1996. The U.S. Supreme Court has subsequently pushed back its review of Reed's constitutional due process claims until November 22nd. And back in Texas late last week, we learned that the state parole board has recommended that Governor Greg Abbott put off the execution, which was scheduled for this week. Court records from three experts cast doubt on the state's timeline. Some state witnesses are changing their stories. Plus, the victim's relatives admit Rodney Reed was in a consensual sexual relationship with victim Stacy Stites, which explains the DNA evidence used to convict Reed. Reed initially told police he did not know Stites, who was supposed to be married to a police officer who eventually wound up behind bars himself in another case. Reed's attorneys say that fiancé, Jimmy Fennell, even confessed to killing Stites.
This case has a lot of twists and turns. Let's go to the panel right off the top now. Attorneys Dina Dahl, Joseph McBride, and Michael Bryant. So, Michael Bryant, do you think it's a good idea that the courts now are jumping in saying, let's not kill this guy until we figure out what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, what's the downside? You know, we've kept him alive for an extra few weeks or months. Better than killing him on the 20th and then deciding the issue on the 22nd.
Yes. Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, and I think a lot of his supporters want him to stay alive much, much longer, perhaps even be completely exonerated here. Dina Dahl, what's your take on this? We've got accusations that the original trial was a mess, that there should have been evidence tested, that the whole theory that the state cooked up is being refuted by expert after expert after expert. Is this ripe for a new trial?
I think it is. I mean, this DNA, it sounds like they spent a lot on the DNA between this relationship between the two of them. They said that was a rape, but now we know it's consensual. I think it opens up that case for a retrial, absolutely.
You know, and the most damaging piece of evidence here, Joseph, is that the defendant said he didn't know the victim, and that may have been what the jury latched onto. I asked this question last week. I'll ask it of you here today. Because he said he didn't know the victim, does that necessarily make him a killer?
Absolutely not. Look, he's having a consensual sexual relationship. He's a black man with a white woman in Central Texas, and the husband happens to be a police officer who later goes to jail. Not a reason to kill.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with your position on this as well. So let's sort of go full circle with it here. Michael Bryant, what do you think is going to happen here? You got the U.S. Supreme Court just said, well, you know, maybe we'll take a look at it. They were supposed to conference on it on Friday. They pushed that forward a little bit further. My guess is the U.S. Supreme Court, as the high court usually does, is say, let's see if the state straightens this out first, and then if the state doesn't, then maybe we'll take a look.
Yeah, I think you're right. And then, you know, they can remand it for a retrial and take care of it at the state level. The Supreme Court doesn't want to rush in and take over the process. They want to give the state an opportunity to do the right thing.
And Dina Dahl, what should the state do here? Should the state turn around and say new trial? Should the state appeals courts turn around and say exoneration?
That's a good question. I think that they're going to go with a new trial. They have already put so much time and effort into convicting him in the first place. He's been in prison for a long time. I can't see them doing 100% reversal and just letting him go at this point.
You know, Joseph, I tend to agree with that, because for a full-blown exoneration at the appeals court level, usually it has to be some like bombshell, irrefutable evidence. But when you have people saying, well, you know, there's a triable issue, in other words, you know, he said, she said, we usually have to have juries settle that legally.
Agreed. State of Texas, let's start with testing the murder weapon in this case. There's DNA on it, test it.
You know, and the state's turning around saying, oh, it may have been contaminated. We don't know if it'll tell the truth. I say still go ahead and test it. Look, what's it going to show? It might show something. We'll wait and see. Celebrity Kim Kardashian taking some of the credit for rallying public support behind Reed, and her husband also making headlines in the criminal justice community. Singer Kanye West performing songs from his new album, Jesus is King. This happening before 200 carefully selected inmates in Harris County, Texas, and in another facility this past weekend. Officials there say it was West's idea to do the show. West also spoke about his new album at a Houston megachurch on Sunday after those performances. The judge who handed convicted murderer Amber Geiger a Bible after sentencing the former cop will not preside over a contempt hearing for the Dallas County District Attorney in the case. Judge Tammy Kemp wants to hold DA John Cruzo in contempt for speaking to the press about the case. A retired judge stepped in and decided Judge Kemp, seen here, should not be allowed to judge the DA over the matter. That retired judge also ruled the DA's own office can represent the DA in the gag order case. Cruzo's attorney accused the judge, Tammy Kemp, who handled the trial, of a personal vendetta against the DA. One of the victims of millionaire pedophile Jeffrey Epstein speaking publicly for the first time today with her attorney, Gloria Allred. The victim, known only as Jane Doe 15, detailed what she says Epstein did to her and said Great Britain's Prince Andrew should testify about any information he has on Epstein. Prince Andrew, of course, late Friday told the BBC he doesn't remember meeting another woman who says the prince had sexually abused her.
Epstein took my sexual innocence in front of a wall of framed photographs of him shaking hands and smiling with celebrities and political leaders. I was only 15 years old. After, he wanted to talk with me about what had just been my first sexual experience and directed me to take time to myself that night to cry. He said that would be beneficial to my growth. Prince Andrew and any others who are close to Epstein should come forward and give a statement under oath on what information they have. Just because Epstein is dead does not mean that others around him don't deserve their day in court as well.
And now to testimony in the trial of a Colorado man accused of killing his fiancée. It reveals he apparently asked for hits on likely witnesses. The jury is hearing testimony over whether Patrick Frazee killed Kelsey Barrett and then asked his girlfriend on the side, Crystal Lee, to clean up the aftermath. She used to go by Crystal Kenny. A former inmate who did time with Frazee testified that Frazee asked him in writing to kill Lee and other witnesses. The handwritten letters from Frazee said he'd really like to see Kenny with a bullet in her head. He also wrote, I know the DA helped put words in her mouth. No video, no weapon, no body, no forensics. They're coaching her for a blank statement to match up with other evidence, Frazee wrote, according to the letter provided by the former fellow inmate. A state expert said the handwriting on that letter indeed looked like Patrick Frazee's. The jury getting that case as we speak. A last-minute delay in the trial of an Ohio woman charged in connection with the so-called Pike County Massacre. Eight members of the Roden and Gilley families were all shot to death at four different homes. Authorities arrested six members of two other families and charged them in connection with the killings, but prosecutors dropped charges against one of the defendants this past summer. Grandmother Rita Jo Newcomb was scheduled to go on trial this week, but both sides agreed to put the case on hold. Newcomb was one of two grandmothers charged indirectly in the killings, but the state, of course, dropped charges against the other one, as we said, over the summer. The delay was a surprise today, since last week the defense disagreed with a state request to push back the trial date.
The parties are in agreement that it would be in the best interest of justice to reschedule this matter for a future hearing. I believe the date that we selected was December 2nd.
Mr. Dwyer, would that be correct, Your Honor? Can Justice Fitz be certified as proceeding?
All right, so both sides are stipulating to the court that the interests of justice are served by rescheduling this to December 2. Ms. Newcomb, you've heard what the attorneys here have said. We're requesting that the state make rescheduling this to December 2 at 1 o'clock p.m. Is that what you want to do also?
Yes. Both sides saying justice would just be better served if we push this off. The judge excusing potential jury members. Newcomb left the courthouse thereafter. A woman with Newcomb told reporters no comment when asked if Newcomb had anything she would like to say. No decision yet from an Iowa judge on what evidence will and will not be thrown out of court in the case of a murdered college student. Prosecutors say Christian Rivera is the one who confessed to arguing with Molly Tibbetts, confessed that there was blood, confessed to putting her body in corn, and then took officers to where he says he dumped her body. But the state admits all of those statements came after a botched attempt to read Rivera his Miranda rights. He did, however, receive a second full Miranda warning, and what he said after that will likely come into the case. Plus, Rivera allowed authorities to search his car before he was in custody, so it's almost certain that evidence of Tibbetts' blood and DNA in the car will also be allowed in the trial. Rivera, of course, pleading not guilty in that case. And still ahead tonight here on The Debrief, local criminal cases we're watching, including jury selection in the trial of a husband accused of murdering his doctor wife. Plus, we're going to bring you back to the trial of a Florida man accused of quadruple murder, where both sides have rested and both sides have a very different theory of who committed the crimes. Day five of jury selection in the death penalty trial of a Florida man accused of murdering his wife. Authorities say a group of three men actually conspired to beat Dr. Teresa Sievers to death with a hammer at home in 2015. Husband Mark Sievers is the accused ringleader. Opening statements in his trial are likely to occur this coming Wednesday. Local reporter Jacqueline Beavis spoke with Law and Crime earlier today about what will make Mark Sievers' trial different from that of Jimmy Rogers, which ended in a second-degree murder conviction.
That the jury, when they listened to Curtis Wainwright, the co-defendant that took the plea deal, they did believe everything that he said. This will really be very, very similar. The state is very much so leaning on the testimony of Curtis Wainwright and what he says on the witness stand and how believable he is to these jurors. That will be the only thing when you come to this case that's the smoking gun is Curtis Wainwright. So if the jury does not believe what he says on the witness stand, then there's no chance of a guilty verdict, I don't think.
And now to the trial of a Florida man accused of a quadruple murder. Prosecutors are trying Henry Segura on charges he killed his girlfriend, Brandy Peters, their three-year-old son, and Peters' twin six-year-old daughters. The state says the motive was $20,000 in unpaid child support, which prevented Segura from getting a six-figure job as a welder in Afghanistan. But Segura says Peters was a drug mule who was killed by a cartel who caught her stealing money. Prosecutors say victim Brandy Peters' sister needed to come back to the stand for a rebuttal case, so they did recall her. They wanted to contest defense claims that Peters was involved in the drug trade.
Did Brandy ever deal or transport drugs?
No, ma'am.
Did she ever disappear for days at a time for out-of-town trips?
No, ma'am.
Had she ever been to Texas?
No, ma'am. Okay. Everybody that knows my mom knows that she was very, very strict on us. And at 16, 17, she would have not left the house for days at a time.
All right, so for Brandy's whole life, you never knew her to go out of town for days at a time, but especially in the year 2000, when she's 17 years old, she's at your mom's house. She's not going out of town anywhere, even for one day.
No, ma'am.
Did Brandy have any money?
No, ma'am.
Did she have some flashy lifestyle?
No, she didn't.
Did she ever have a car that was reliable enough to make it to Texas?
No, ma'am.
The jury got to hear from the man the defense claims is the real killer in this case. He is a known Colombian drug smuggler. The man who claims ordered hit the defense claims ordered the hit testified that Angel Avila Quinones was one of several people who went into the victim's home to commit the murders. Records show he was deported in 2009, after nearly a year before the murders. He's originally from Colombia, but now lives in Italy. Earlier this month, an FBI agent and attorneys for both sides traveled to Rome to depose this alternate suspect.
At any time between your arrest on February 16, 2000, and you leaving the United States on April 8, 2009, were you out of custody?
Nunca, jamás.
Never, ever.
Mr. Avila, do you know someone in the United States by the name of Carlos Santos?
No conozco ese nombre.
Do not know that name.
Otis Jackson.
No conozco a esa persona con ese nombre.
I also do not know that person by that name.
Brandy Peters.
Tampoco lo conozco.
I also do not know him.
Mr. Avila, back in November 19th of 2010, did you travel Tallahassee, Florida to commit murders against Brandy Peters, Amaya Peters, Anaya Peters, and Javonte Segura?
No, senor.
No, sir.
An expert for Segura's defense, however, says Avila Quinones' DNA was a partial match to evidence found in the victim's home, but Avila Quinones claims he's never even been to Tallahassee.
Can you flip that to Tallahassee?
Well, Tallahassee, no. I was transported from Tampa to I don't know. I can't remember the name. I have trouble remembering names in the United States. The places that I've been to, there were county jails. There weren't prisons for the county. I was in Brooksville, and then I was in another place that sounds similar to Tallahassee, but that is in Tallahassee.
Can you explain why your DNA was located at the scene of the murders in this case?
Pues a mí me parece extraño.
It is strange to me because I've never been there on that date. I have never been in the United States, and I didn't have any concerns when the Interpol called me because I knew that it wasn't me.
The defense called its final witnesses this morning. An expert on crime scene reconstruction explained his theory of how victim Brandi Peters was attacked and murdered in her home.
This photograph actually shows it's the master bathroom window, which was found unlocked. There's wasn't any processing done in terms of collecting any DNA samples or fingerprints or anything like that around that particular window. This is the back door to the residence, the deadbolt, which was unlocked. However, the doorknob below that was locked. There's actually a blood stain on that red curtain. Some blood stains that were present on the mattress. A telephone, it's on the floor, the handset is off the cradle, and the telephone cord has been actually both cut and torn. There's actually a bullet hole right here that's in a closet. That's a bullet that passed through the window from inside the room to the outside. And the yellow circle is showing another trajectory rod where a bullet impacted and actually perforated that door. This is a bullet impact on the metal frame of the glass shower. Brandi Peters actually has on her left shoulder area a gunshot wound. There's some struggle that took place in the bedroom, some gunfire that's taken place in the bedroom. She suffered at least some injury in the bedroom and then has fled from the bedroom and headed out into the hallway, and there's some blood stains that denote going from the hallway and continuing towards the front of the house.
The defense's expert described a violent struggle between victim Brandi Peters and her assailant. Peters apparently fought for her life as the attack moved from her bedroom to the front of her house.
Brandi Peters would have fled down the hallway out the front door and then been stopped in that location. There's some blood spatter indicating some injuries perhaps being inflicted there before she's moved back inside into the foyer. What you likely have is Brandi Peters low down toward the floor being beaten by somebody who's swinging or wielding a weapon coming down on her. The impact is occurring lower and the blood is then being distributed up the door from the actual impact. That's indicative of a longer weapon being used because you're actually having to project the blood in those areas and be able to get it up high enough to put it above the top of the door.
Would a 32 caliber revolver, is that of the length that you're discussing?
It would be something longer than that. They're lettered circles showing areas where there are some probable footwear impressions. There are different patterns within them, indicating so most likely you're talking about more than one source here. From different types of footwear, then it obviously would mean that you've got more than one type of footwear. That's most often associated with multiple people.
Gruesome, gruesome, gruesome. On cross-examination, prosecutors said there were no signs of forced entry. The state argues that means victim Brandi Peters likely knew her attacker and let that attacker in.
Tamaya Peters is sitting on the couch. Apparently her back of her head is turned towards the whoever it is that assaulted her, correct? Because she was shot in the back of the head.
Shot in the back of the head, yes.
Your experience in a homicide investigator, as well as your crime scene, would indicate that she probably knew who that person was if she had her back to her and was just sitting there calmly.
I don't think I would diagnose that simply saying I can't say that it's a matter of knowing the person versus not realizing that the person's there. There could be different alternatives to why she's got her head turned. In fact, you don't even know that she's sitting there with her back to the person the entire time. All you know is at the moment of the shot that is coming from the back of the head.
Both sides agree the struggle actually started in the bedroom and that Peters took refuge in her master bathroom. But they begin to disagree when talking about how Brandi Peters was able to escape the bathroom.
Possibly when the person is reloading it, because we're talking about a revolver, right?
Yeah, I could be any particular reason, but that's certainly a possibility.
And her ability to escape not only out of the bathroom there, but out of the bedroom in itself kind of gives away that we're only talking about one individual, because if you had multiple persons, somebody's may be blocking those exits, would they not?
Again, I really couldn't say that. I mean, you could make that inference, but there's nothing in terms of the physical evidence that would establish that that is or is not the case.
It certainly is within the realm of your examination.
That's correct. There's nothing that I could say that there was or wasn't somebody blocking a door or anything like that, because there are multiple possibilities. Somebody could be there and she just managed to slip past that person. There's just no way to really discern whether or not somebody was or was not there.
And then given the fact that we're talking about a 3- and a 6-year-old that are still survivors, being Javonta and Tanaya, certainly reasonable to feel they went and hid in the bathroom, right?
I don't think it's unreasonable. I don't think the physical evidence necessarily says that that did or didn't happen.
And nothing in your analysis says that Henry Segura didn't do this.
I think that's correct. I mean, I'm not, I'm certainly not saying he could not have had any involvement. I'm just laying out what the physical evidence indicates.
I mean, isn't that for the jury to decide? Let's go back to our experts now. Joseph McBride, what do you make of this relative testifying, oh, well, you know, Brandi Peters was just completely by the book when she was a teenager, therefore, as an adult, she must have also been by the book.
Relevance? I mean, great. Mom was strict when you were a teenager. That does not change anything about the last 2 years of your life.
And Dina Dahl, what do you make of this testimony of Avila Quinones? He's sitting in Italy. Is he even facing jeopardy if he says anything that's completely off the mark that implicates him in this in some fashion?
Maybe not. I don't think that his testimony is actually that compelling. Who would, they're basically asking him for confession to murder. Who would do that?
Yeah, I mean, he's sitting there saying, oh, I was never there. I was never there. This, that, and the other thing. Does the jury buy it, Dina, or are they looking at him with suspicion?
Well, the fact that he has his DNA there, I think makes him just saying, no, I wasn't there. I think that if I were on the jury, I would want more. I would want the prosecution to somehow show that he actually didn't leave the country. It sounds like he was a student there at the time, which meant he was free to leave. I would have wanted more from the prosecution other than him just saying, no, I didn't commit the crime. That to me is not credible. Who would actually admit to committing the crime?
Yeah, you know, I'm sure the state's turning around saying partial DNA. Michael Bryant, very quickly, Patrick Frazee convicted after a couple of hours of deliberation. First degree murder, any surprise?
Not a surprise. They believe the girlfriend who helped clean up the mess.
Yeah, we're going to break that down tomorrow here on The Debrief when we have a little bit more time. That's all the time we have for tonight. Thanks a lot to the panel. We'll see you tomorrow at 5 Eastern.